I want to start today with a couple of points of introduction to the kinos in general, and then maybe just two quick points about kinovav. The two points of introduction about kinos in general both come from Rav Daniel Gladstein and his beautiful sefer that on the Bein HaMetzarim called The Darkness and the Dawn. I'm going to get a lot from that sefer today because the two svarim I had with me on the plane were Gemara to catch up on Daf Yomi and The Darkness and the Dawn. So and it's very, very beautiful things that he has to say. So one point that that he makes is that, you know, as we're about to embark on an entire morning of essentially traveling through the various tragedies in our history and thinking about and reading about and crying about all of the things that happened to Klal Yisrael, it's important to realize just how great a miracle the very fact that we're here today really is. Meaning a lot of times people think that, you know, if only the Ribbono Shel Olam would show me a miracle, if only we'd have a Kriyas Yamsuf, if only we would see an Eser Makos, if only we would see a Nes of Chanukah or a Nes of Purim, then our Emunah would be stronger. You know, because as we know, Emunah is not something that's either a yes or a no. It's not something that you either have or don't have. It's there are many levels of Emunah, and that's what it means that a person has to work on their Emunah. And certainly we all feel that there's a lot of work to be done in terms of our Emunah and Bitachon. But we sometimes feel that if only we would see a real miracle, then our Emunah would be stronger. So the first thing to contemplate is that we do see a real miracle each and every day. You just look around the room, and the fact that you see the faces of other Jews around you, you look around your community, and the fact that you see communities of Jews living al Pitoras Hashem in the year 2022, that's a miracle. Because you think about how many times there were existential threats to the Jewish people, how many times there were those that wanted to destroy us. Just to run through a very quick list. In Mitzrayim, chamushim alu b'nei Yisrael. Only 20% of us made it out of Mitzrayim. 80% of us were killed in Mitzrayim. By Chorban Bayis Rishon, again, the death toll was just enormous. Chorban Bayis Sheni, also, staggering numbers of people were killed in Chorban Bayis Sheni. Josephus says that it was over 1 million Jews were lost in Chorban Bayis Sheni. And then you go on to the Crusades, and again, you go on to Spain and the Inquisition, and how many tens of thousands of Jews were killed, and then the Khmelnytsky pogroms, and it goes on and on, and of course, the Holocaust. And to think that there are thriving Jewish communities, it means that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, in a certain sense, not in a certain sense, in a very real way, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is telling us that he wants us to be here. And when I say wants us to be here, I don't just mean Klal Yisrael, but he chose us to be here. Meaning each of us has a series of miracles that enabled us to be alive today. Certainly those of us who are grandchildren of Holocaust survivors, any Holocaust survivor only survived because there were many, many miracles. I've never met a Holocaust survivor that only experienced one miracle. Anyone who survived had many, many miracles along the way. And, you know, it could have been somebody else's grandparents that survived. Why was it my grandparents that survived? Elamai, the Ribbono Shel Olam, had certain neshamos he wanted to put on this earth, dafka through these people, and he's chosen us. He's chosen us to be here. And it's a tremendous sense of achrayus that comes with, to realize that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us to be here. Now, after the Chedah Meraglim, Tisha B'Av was the day that every year people would die. 1/40th of the people who were alive between the ages of 20 and 60 would die. And there was Avelus every single year on Tisha B'Av. And we know that last year when people went to sleep in their graves, the Gemara tells us, and they woke up the next morning and they tried again and again and again, and sure enough, by Tu B'Av, they realized that they just weren't dying. So can you imagine how they felt? That, you know, they weren't supposed to be there. They weren't supposed to be alive. But for some reason, HaKadosh Baruch Hu spared them. HaKadosh Baruch Hu rescinded the decree. He rescinded the Gezerah. And they felt that the rest of their lives must have been so mission-driven, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu allowed them to still be here. And that's the way we're supposed to feel on Tisha B'Av. That's the way every Jew that's alive today is supposed to feel. That there were so many times that we weren't supposed to be here. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, yeah, you're going to be here. And therefore you have a mission. The thing is that sometimes we lose perspective. Sometimes we get so narrow and we get so caught up in what's happening today and what happened yesterday and tomorrow, and we can't see beyond, you know, yesterday, today, and tomorrow. We can't see beyond the few people in our immediate circle. We can't see beyond the point in history, the very tiny dot in history within which we live, that we lose perspective about the fact that from a historical perspective, we are a miracle. From a historical perspective, we were put here because HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants something from us, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us a mission to do, to accomplish in this world. And this is not new. We just read in the Kriyas HaTorah this morning, even that door of the Midbar, those survivors, they go into Eretz Yisrael. And you'll be there for a long time in Eretz Yisrael, the Pasuk tells us, and you'll acclimate. And you'll forget that you're a survivor. And you'll forget that you were personally chosen by HaKadosh Baruch Hu not to be among the Meisei Midbar. You'll do things that will anger HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You'll lose that sense of mission. You'll start to think that Judaism began, if not in the five towns, then in Brooklyn. And then it moved to the five towns. So point number one is to just recognize, as we go through the entire morning of Avelos and the entire morning of Kinos, that it's not just that we're reading about stories that happened to other people long ago. It's not just that we're reading about terrible things that happened to the Jews. We're reading about how we were chosen. I don't mean chosen among the nations, that too, but we're reading about how we were chosen among Klal Yisrael to be here, to be alive, to experience the Tisha B'Av, and Be'ez Hashem to be the ones who are going to be able to experience Geula. Now that sense of being pulled from the ashes is something that is represented by the name of Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu had a lot of really beautiful Jewish names, Avigdar and Yekusiel and Yehonasan, but he wasn't known by any of his Jewish names. He was known by the name Moshe. Why? Vatomer kimin amayim mishisehu. Because I drew him from the water. There's a Bas Paro that gave him that name, but the imagery of being drawn from the water means that he was meant to die like everybody else. All of the other boys were also were thrown in the water, and none of them survived. But Moshe Rabbeinu was picked, he was chosen. He was meant to survive. And therefore he had a mission to fulfill. You know, they say that, I don't know where the story comes from, but they say that the legend has it that when the Chassam Sofer was born, his mother was a very big tzaddikas, and where they lived, it was, I guess, somewhere, you know, far north. So Shabbos must have been summertime, and Shabbos started very, very late. You know, it's like you go to England now, Shabbos starts at like 11 p.m. So in those kinds, you go to St. Petersburg in Russia, Shabbos starts at like, it doesn't start, meaning it starts, it doesn't finish. It just goes on and on, and the sun never sets too many degrees below the horizon. So those communities had a minhag that they would always start Shabbos early. And the Chassam Sofer's mother went into labor on Friday, and everyone was in shul ready to be Mekabel Shabbos. And she realized that it didn't have to be Shabbos. Now, if a woman goes into labor on Shabbos, you mechallel Shabbos. But If you can control it and make it not be Shabbos, you know, so then let it not be Shabbos, and you won't have to be Mechal Shabbos. So she realized it didn't have to be Shabbos that she delivered on. So she sent a messenger into the shul and told the Rav of the shul that he should stop the whole tzibur from being Mekabel Shabbos. Because once the tzibur, there's only one shul town, then as soon as that shul is Mekabel Shabbos, that's binding on everybody. So she sent the Rav of the shul she sent a message to the Rav of the shul, stop the tzibur from being Mekabel Shabbos, because I don't want to have to be Mekabel Shabbos to deliver the baby. This kind of tzedekas, this kind of thinking. The amazing part of the story is that the Rav said, okay. And he gave a clap and he said, everybody, we're going to sit and learn for a little bit. And he was still the Rav the next week. I mean, that's the biggest miracle of the whole story. So they sat and learned until the baby was born, and then they sent the shliach into the shul. And they said, Mazel Tov, you know, Mrs. Schreiber had a boy. Now everyone could go on and be Mekabel Shabbos. So apparently, the way the story goes, the Rav of the shul got up and he said, Mrs. Schreiber had a boy, and she's going to name this boy Moshe. He decided, the rabbi picked the name. She's going to name this boy Moshe. Because someone born under such conditions must be destined for something really, really great. I can you imagine? I mean, it's a lot of pressure, but that sense of being chosen, that sense of being picked out as like, you are going to be the Moshe of this generation. And he was. Chassam Sofer is one of those rare people, Rabbi Bamberger pointed out, Chassam Sofer is one of those rare people that was almost universally, not just appreciated, but everyone felt he was one of them. The Yeki said, yeah, he's a German, he's a Yeki, and the Hungarians thought he was Hungarian. Everyone lays claim to the Chassam Sofer. That sense of chosenness, that sense of mission. So that's point number one. Point number two, I'll try to keep it a little shorter, point number two, to think about over the course of the day, is that the Navi Zechariah tells us about the days of Mashiach. You know, we think about the days of Mashiach and we think like, everything's going to be amazing, it's going to be fantastic, life is going to be easy, we're going to love it, there's nothing that will take away our joy on the days of Mashiach. And I remember Rav Lapiansky once wrote an essay in Mishpacha magazine that some people didn't like, where he said, it was right at the beginning of COVID, he called it, Mashiach is not the answer. Which was his response to everyone saying at the beginning of COVID, it must mean Mashiach is coming. Meaning, we have to hope and yearn every day that Mashiach comes. And we also have to live today that Mashiach is not yet here. And we can't only survive today if Mashiach is coming tomorrow. We have to survive today regardless of whether Mashiach comes tomorrow or not. And sometimes we think of Yemos HaMashiach and we don't really get an accurate picture of what it's going to be like. But it's got to be good. I mean, it's what we're waiting for. And yet, the Navi Zacharias describes, Bayomahu Yigdal Hamispeid Birushalayim Kimispad Hadadrimon Bibikas Megiddo. That there's going to be a hesped, an intense hesped in Yerushalayim. Like the hesped of Hadadrimon in the morning in the Bika of Megiddo. Visafta Aretz Mishpachos Mishpachos Levad. And each of the families are going to mourn. That's not the way we think of. You think of Yemos HaMashiach, days of Avelus, of mourning. Now we have mourning. And then when Mashiach comes, the mourning is going to end. So Rav Gladstein explains so beautifully, based on a vart from Rav Simcha Wasserman, the son of Rav Elchanan, where he points out that the Navi tells us, V'nasati, Navi Yecheskel tells us, V'nasati lechem lev chadash, V'ruach chadasha etein bikir bechem, V'asirosi es lev ha'evin mi'besarchem, V'nasati lechem lev basar. That the Navi says, I'm going to give you a new heart and a new ruach, and the heart of stone that we have is going to be taken out, and instead we're going to have a lev basar. Kadosh Baruch Hu is going to give us a lev basar. So Simcha Wasserman explained that when we're in Galus, HaKadosh Baruch Hu has given us a lev even. He's given us a heart of stone. Which, l'chor, is not fair. Why should we have a heart of stone? Meaning, it's not hard enough to serve the Ribbono Shel Olam, it's not hard enough to be spiritually sensitive, it's not hard enough to connect to tefillah, It's not hard enough to connect to Avoda. We need a Lev Evan to make things harder. Can't HaKadosh Baruch Hu give us a Lev Basar to begin with? And Rav Simcha explained that Hashem gives us a heart of stone because it's the only way we're going to be able to cope. When women and children are slaughtered in front of their husbands and fathers, like happened repeatedly in the times of the Crusades, when children are kidnapped and baptized, like happened in the times of the Inquisition. And by the way, any time we refer to anything happening throughout history, it all repeated itself in the Holocaust. When families were burned or shot right in front of their own family members, how does a person live? How does a person wake up the next morning after seeing all of those things? Kadosh Baruch Hu needs to give us a heart of stone because it's the only way we're going to survive. Every once in a while you see a person who has that kind of neshama where he seems to have a lev basar. And he can't live. He can't live. It's a tormented life if you have a lev basar. You need a lev evan. You know, the stipler used to meet with people all day, not all day, but he had times he'd meet with people, and people would come and they would, you had to write down what you needed because he was deaf. He was hard of hearing, so you had to either yell really loudly or write things down for him. And at the end of the day, he had like this pile of kvitalach, of people's tzaros. And one time one of his family members took a peek, wanted to see the kinds of things the stipler was dealing with. And the stipler got very angry and he said, "No, don't look, don't look." And he thought, you know, it must be because it was private that the stipler didn't want him looking. And the stipler muttered under his breath, "You won't be able to handle the pain." A person with a lev basar can't handle all that pain. So Hashem gave us a lev heaven, it's the greatest gift that Hashem gave us. But that's not the way human beings are supposed to be. We're supposed to be compassionate. We're supposed to be sensitive. We're supposed to be spiritually sensitive. So when Mashiach comes and the world goes back to its original tikkun, the way it's supposed to be, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to say, "V'nasati lechem lev chadosh, ruach chadosh, atein bikir b'chem, v'asirosi es lev ha'evin mibasarchem, v'nasati lechem lev basar." I'm going to give you yet a lev basar. But that day is going to be a rough day. Because that day that we get a lev basar, we're going to have to start thinking about everything that we've seen, everything that we've heard about. These kinos aren't just going to be hard words to say on a Tisha B'Av morning. It's going to be so real. It's going to be so painful. Bayom ahu yigdal hamispeid b'Yerushalayim k'mispad hadadrimon b'bigas Megiddo. The hesped is going to be a tremendous hesped on that day. And that inkling of a lev basar that we hope for b'mos HaMashiach, we're sort of gifted, if you can call it that, a little bit, in a tiny measure, we're gifted that lev basar on Tisha B'Av as well. So in that sense, this morning we can feel a little bit more than we normally feel. We're normally so stoic and we don't cry. I mean, I do all the time, but usually not over Churban, just anything else that's emotional. But today we just feel a little more acutely. We have that sense of a lev basar. So those are two thoughts.